Welcome back to the Startup Podcast, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Dan Vonderhyde, and we do this once a week. If you've never listened before, I put this up once a week, a talk with somebody working in a startup, somebody who's an entrepreneur who has taken an idea, put it on paper, and then actually put it into action. Have some investors coming on in the coming weeks, which is great to get their side of things. If you've never listened to it before, there are plenty of back episodes that are available on podcrunch.com. Of course, I would like you to subscribe and favorite the podcast in the Stitcher radio app. You can certainly do me a big favor if you're a Mac person and go into iTunes. Give me a rating, give me a comment, help me become more visible. I've seen some pretty steady growth in the number of subscribers through Stitcher, and I've said before that's so encouraging to me that people are out there and this community is thriving. People are interested in really what I consider the good news of Louisville. You just don't hear about this stuff typically in your traditional media outlets. So to the podcast we take it, and I like it that way. This week, it's pretty cool. I had a lot of fun having this talk with Jason Falls, who's somewhat of a new media celebrity, not just in Louisville, but around the country. He's out there hosting events and certainly very visible on Twitter and in his blogs, Social Media Explorer. FallsOffTheRocker.com, if you've never read that, is hilarious. Jason is totally a personable guy, and we have somewhat of a similar background. We're both radio guys. We're both sports fans. We both come from very small towns, so the talk was very entertaining to me, and I certainly hope it is for you as well. I do want to make a special appeal to any of you who have been on the podcast or anybody that would like to be on the podcast. If you are most specifically an investor, a venture capitalist, somebody with the desire and the intention of investing in the startup community around town, I'd love to get more of your perspective on this thing. We have Andy Swan coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm real excited about that. That was a great conversation. But I want more of that. I want to know the perspective of the people who are writing the checks and what it is they look for in the people who are working in these startups with these ideas and what motivates them to actually get involved with the company and what they expect out of it. From all my conversations on the podcast here, lots of people say that there is plenty of money sitting around. They just need to be motivated and find the right projects. And I'm super, super interested in having that perspective on the podcast. So if you know anybody or if you are one of those people, please send me a tweet at Dan Vonderhyde, spelled V-O-N-D-E-R-H-E-I-D-E, or send me an email, startup@podcrunch.com. Prepare to be amused by my conversation with Jason Falls from Social Media Explorer. I met a lot of people through this. It's great.
That's good.
So
that's real good.
And now it's your turn.
Awesomeness.
Because I consider you a startup.
I am.
Being a man that is your own brand,
yep,
so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
And when I first came across the Jason Falls experience, the Typhoon Jason or Hurricane Jason.
That's a good way to look at it.
You were working at Doe.
Yeah.
Right? And you were sort of, you were the social media manager, but that was 2006 or 7? And that was like early days.
It was an eternity ago.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't
it?
Yeah. But I had a kid back then.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago. Don't make me feel old. and at that point, you were consulting brand. You were working on behalf of the agency, consulting brands, and trying to wade into these waters of social.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That accurate?
Yep, that's accurate.
And then at some point, you said, you know what? I'm going to be my own guy here.
Yeah.
What has changed since that time, and what led you to make that decision to jump into Social Media Explorer as your own thing?
Well, what has changed since then? The reason that I left Doe, there were a lot of reasons I left Doe, but one of them was I'd kind of climbed the ladder really quickly at Doe, and I was VP and Director of Interactive. And so I was doing new business pitches. I was running the development team, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what I'm good at.
Okay.
I'm good at writing social media strategies and
okay,
trying to think creative ways for our clients to
so did they move you into that VP thing because you were the best guy within the Jason could probably do this really well.
Yeah, I think that probably was part of it. I mean, part of it was I was frustrated because I was out there, you know, pitching all this social media work, and we didn't have anybody running the interactive department. And so I basically went into my CEO's office kind of frustrated and said, if you're not going to hire somebody to run the department, let me run it because we could be bringing in more business. Bringing in more work. And so he said, okay, you're it. And I was like, great. Now I got another job.
Thou art knighted.
Yeah, exactly. So I really and truly was, and I did that for, you know, almost a year and had a lot of fun doing it, but I was getting away from what I was good at. And so I left to just go out on my own, hang a shingle, and be an independent.
And what year was that?
That was 2009, summer of 2009. So my business is technically about 3 years and a month old right now.
All right.
And so I, you know, I had a couple of clients kind of on the hook that told me that if you leave, we'll support you and you can come work for us or work with us. And I was able to start building an independent consultancy. And then about 6 months ago, I had another friend of mine who wrote for Social Media Explorer, Nicole Kelly, and we started talking, and she wanted to build a full agency.
Right.
So I basically said to her, well, instead of you trying to build an agency under your brand name, why don't we take my brand name, which is already sort of established, and do it together? And so we kind of merged.
But you sort of, to use the buzzword, pivoted at some point away from, correct me if I'm wrong, from doing strategy for people into being, I mean, you wrote a book.
Yeah.
You do speaking engagements. Yep. Are you putting together your own events?
Yep.
And conferences or whatever you want to call them. Is that what the business has turned into?
Yeah, a little bit. So the business now as it stands, and I'll back up a minute and go into the pivot, but the business now has two divisions. We've got the agency division, which is sort of a maturation of that consultancy, and then merging with Nicole's business and building a true digital marketing agency.
And she doesn't live in Louisville.
No,
right?
She's in Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. All right.
And I'm very involved in new business pitches. I'm very involved in developing strategies for client, but she takes care of all the operational stuff, all the billing, all the, you know, making sure we've got developers and programmers and graphic artists and all that kind of stuff.
She runs things.
She runs the agency, right? I get to do what I am good at, which was the original reason I left Doe. I want to do what I'm good at, not all that other nonsense, right? So there's that part of the business. The other part of the business is the information products part. And so I've got a conference that I run. We did 5 cities in 2012. We're going to do 4 next year.
And that is called?
It's called Explore. And so it's, you know, Explore whatever city we're in. So we just got done with Explore Minneapolis. We're going to Explore Orange County in California coming up next month.
I guess the OC?
Almost next month. Yeah, the OC. And then we'll be in Portland, Oregon.
Not Orange County.
In November. And then next year we're still picking the cities we're going to go to. We're going to do 4 next year. So we've got
you're the choosing them, or are people approaching you?
You know, we chose this year's cities based on markets that I thought were what I would think were sort of underserved by of national caliber speakers coming to town and doing stuff.
I was going the opposite way. I was thinking that you were going into hotbeds of activity, thinking these guys are progressive and they're ahead of the curve and there's a big community.
We intentionally went after communities that we thought, and I mean, in retrospect, Minneapolis is probably further along than we really anticipated. But we did Nashville, we did Dallas, and then we're doing obviously the Orange County because people typically go to LA, they don't go to the OC. And so we're going into communities where there are brands, there are companies, there are businesses that need this kind of education and training.
Okay.
And are ripe for it, right? And so we're going to actually let the communities help us pick for 2013.
Okay.
We're going to put up about probably 8 finalists. We've got a short list, and we're going to whittle that down to about 8, and we're probably going to put it up as soon as next week and say, okay, who in these communities wants to try to motivate people to come and sort of vote in our little informal poll? That'll go into our decision-making process. If we can get some sort of signal from, let's say, an Atlanta or a Chicago or a Vancouver that they're really interested in this, then that might help us make the decision.
How did you come to develop this part of the business? Was it sort of a natural, hey, you know, I got a lot of knowledge to share. I think I can do it to an entire room of people.
Right. Yeah, it was a little bit of a pivot, and I'll tell you, there's two ways that the conference came to be. The first way was that about 9 months into my consultancy in the spring of 2010, I had a client who basically stopped paying their bills. And I realized that if I was going to anchor my ability to put food on the table for my kids to 4, 5, or 6 consulting clients at a time, if I lost one or two clients all at once,
it's devastating.
Or they stopped paying their bills, it could kill me.
Sure.
So I knew I had to diversify my revenue streams. I had to figure out other ways to make money. So that was kind of the seed. At the same time, I was doing some one-day conferences, kind of like the Emerging Media Summit that we do here in Louisville with Louisville Digital Association and the IABC folks, which is coming up in October, by the way. So we do that once a year to raise money for LDA and IABC. Well, I had been doing some spinoff versions of those for like the Charlottesville, Virginia American Marketing Association group and had done a couple of those.
You don't have any ties to that town.
No, not really. So we bounce around, I bounced around, and basically I would bring in some speakers and a couple of sponsors and help raise money for these organizations, these associations. And so I realized one day, well, wait a minute, why don't I try to do this myself and raise money for me instead of somebody else? I
mean, Look out for old number one, baby.
Yeah, not that I don't want to be charitable and help these groups out, but I wanted to. I wanted to do something.
It is possible to serve people and benefit yourself at the same time.
Absolutely. So we tried one in Toledo in May of 2011, and I thought, well, I'm just going to roll the dice. I went to the Hilton up there, got a ballroom, called 5 or 6 speaker friends of mine and said, hey, I want you to help me. You know, I'm going to experiment here. This is kind of an iteration of a product for me, and so let's try it. And we had about, I think it was about 120, 130 people. Who showed up and, paid, I don't know, $150 or something like that to get in. And I was able to pay all the bills, you know, for the event, the room and the catering and all that kind of stuff.
So that was a big risk on your part.
It was a very big risk.
It could have been, 10 people show up and you're stuck. You got to pay the hotel.
Yeah,
you got to pay your buddies.
Exactly.
They didn't volunteer, did they?
No, they did. I was able to kind of lean on them a little bit and say, hey, do this for me. I mean, I paid their travel, right?
Okay, gotcha.
I had a couple of people. I reimbursed them for their travel. But basically I said, hey, let's do this and see if it works. And I was able to pay for the room. We got enough people to sort of make it, the cost worth doing. I charged a couple of sponsors some, a sponsorship fee to just kind of test that pricing structure out and all that good stuff. And it worked. It was financially, I wouldn't say incredibly successful, but it was at least solvent. I could do it.
Okay.
So I had.
And that's a small town, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Toledo is a small underserved market, right?
Yeah.
Close enough to where they could go to Detroit to get a lot of this kind of stuff, but far enough away that some businesses aren't going to go do that there. So then one of my speakers in Toledo was actually Mike Lewis, who is the VP of Marketing for Awareness, which is a social media management software. And he wanted to do an event just like the one we did in Toledo in Boston. So he said, Awareness will basically sponsor the whole thing. Come do another one.
Okay.
So the second event then was in October of 2011. It was in Boston, about 150 people, paid a little bit higher price. I had one sponsor basically underwriting the operational costs.
Okay.
So it was a lot more profitable.
Yeah, sure.
And so at that point, and because I was in Boston, I was able to get like CC
Chapman. How'd you sell a sponsorship? Is that just...
Well, that was Mike Lewis. He wanted to do it. He's like, I want to do kind of like a miniature user conference.
Oh, okay.
I don't want other sponsors involved, so I'm just going to tell me how much it's going to cost, and I'll write the check.
Like you don't have a sales staff is what I'm getting
exactly.
at, to go out and say, okay.
No, I did not have a sales staff. So then we were, and this was about the same time that Aaron Marshall and I started having conversations about joining forces and him coming over to Social Media Explorer, and he was running Texmo, and so we had that conversation, and that sort of panned out. And I basically told him, hey, these events are working, and they're going really well, and so I think this is going to be kind of a premium product for us. This is going to be something that we can diversify our revenue stream, not be so dependent on consulting work, and probably if we price it right and get enough sponsors and build enough of an audience for it, we can actually make this a profit center.
Sure.
And so we, instead of doing, okay, we're going to do another event and just doing these little one-off things, I said, no, we're going to announce that we're doing an entire series. We're going to tackle 2012. We're going to do five cities. We're going to go to all these different time zones, and we're just going to be aggressive about it. We put together a sponsorship packet, and I think I sent the email out on December 1st and said to basically about 30 companies that I had worked with that were social technology companies and whatnot that I knew were going to be interested in this type of event because I planted the seed talking to a few people, like awareness and so on and so forth. I think it was December 1st I sent the email out. We had two captain-level sponsorships, about 8 second-tier sponsorships, and about 10 third-tier sponsorships.
And you just put that stuff together yourself?
I just put that together. Put together a little packet. Here's what the conference is going to be. Here's who we're targeting. Here's the cities. Here's the dates. And then here's the sponsorship packages, and here's what you get out of it.
Okay.
I sent that email out on December 1st. By December 3rd, 48 hours later, I had sold my two captain-level sponsorships. I had sold 4 of the 8 navigator-level sponsorships for the year, not for one event, for all 5.
Are the companies that bought the sponsorships, are they startups? Mostly?
Yeah, so they would have been at some point. Some of them were pretty big companies. Like we've had Vitru, which was recently acquired by Oracle.
Okay.
A lot of our sponsors are social media management solutions, so social technology companies. And a lot of them are competitors, too, which has been a little bit interesting to try to, you know, figure that piece out because, you know, you've got...
Mud wrestling.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how you sort everything out, man.
So you've got Expion, which they were a consulting client of mine, and they were the first people to say, hey, we're in. We want the captain level for the whole year.
That's a nice feeling.
It was awesome. I was like, holy crap, I just, like, made a 50-some-odd thousand-dollar sale. That's freaking amazing, you know? We went into the holidays last year thinking we nailed this. We've got a revenue stream.
Well, now you got to deliver the product.
Yeah, now you got to deliver the product. And so what's been fun though is now once we had commitments from these sponsors, we knew we could at least pay the bills. We could rent the room. We could do the catering. The ticket sales were going to be the profit. The ticket sales were the gravy, right? So we started out in Dallas and. We rolled the dice. It was an experiment, and 256 people showed up, and they paid $250 a head, between $200 and $250 a head. There were some discounts and all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, we looked down at the bottom line and said, "Okay, now we know what we're doing."
Right.
You know, we've
multiply that times 5.
Absolutely.
And is it the same program in every city, or are there new and different things?
No, it's not it's not all the same. There are some of the same speakers. Like for instance, Tom Webster from Edison Research is probably one of the penultimate minds on understanding consumer behavior. Edison does all of the exit polling for the elections for all the major news networks and whatnot. So he's a market researcher. And there's probably nobody in my mind in America right now that understands consumer behavior and social media better than he does.
Okay.
And so that's he's a premium dude. He's going to be at every conference I do if scheduling permits. So he's there all the time talking about consumer usage. There's several others that are there at just about all of them as well. Some of them are involved with our sponsors. Some of them are just people that I want to come speak. Because they're smart folks. But then we change it up. You know, my challenge every event is we've got to make it better than the last one. And so unlike a typical startup that has either a software platform or especially in the technology world, if you've got a software platform or an app or something like that, you build it and then you build on it. Well, with events, you build it once, and then you have to completely deconstruct it and rebuild it all over again sometimes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you can keep some foundational elements. I'm always going to be one of the keynote speakers because it's my event and nanny, nanny, poo-poo.
That's right.
You know, that's just the way it works. neener, neener. I'm always...
Just for historical purposes, mm-hmm. The first time anybody's ever said nanny, nanny, poo-poo.
Nanny, poo-poo.
On the startup podcast.
Very good. I like it. I guess I said it wrong, too. Isn't it nana nana boo boo stick your head in doo doo? I think that's what it is. Something like that. Anyway,
this is a very mature conversation.
Absolutely,
Jason.
Absolutely. But you know, so I'm going to bring in like at each one, if I could, I would have the same roster of speakers and the same programming. But if I did that more than 2 or 3 times, it would get stale,
right?
And the audience would complain. Well, I saw tweets about all this crap.
Yeah, right. Well, everything's so well documented.
Exactly.
Immediately.
Exactly.
Like, I know what Van Halen played on their set list last night.
Right.
And, you know.
So you've got to, and in a sense, a conference is a performance. You know, it's it's like a musician.
You bet.
Or
it's an experience.
It's an experience. And right. So when you go up on stage, you got to deliver something new and fresh and exciting.
Uh-huh.
You know, to a degree. Some of your content can be the same, but you've got to add that flavor to it. And so that's the challenge that we face now. But I actually like that challenge because it forces me to sit down and say, okay, I've already talked about, you know, content strategy. I've already talked about conversions and lead generation. I've already talked about this. What am I going to talk about next? Because I've got to push myself so that I can push my audience. And then with all of my speakers, I don't let them get lazy either. I mean, Tim Hayden is one guy. He's a mobile.
I love him because he's a Windows phone guy.
Yeah, he's a great dude. So Tim speaks at my events, and he did the first two talks he did in Dallas and Nashville. Were very good talks. I mean, he's a very good, you know, mobile expert.
He was at the emerging media thing last year.
He was. He was here last year. That's right. And so Tim, he spoke in Minneapolis, and I called him a couple months before, and I said, I hope you're not going to do the same thing. You know, let's shake it up. Do something different.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately, he had moved from 44 Doors to Edelman Digital, so he had a whole new perspective on the mobile world. So he had a whole new talk, and it was awesome. It was amazing. So, yeah, that's what an event startup kind of looks like. But what's awesome for me is that's one piece of the information products puzzle. I've got a learning community online, which uh-huh. is a software platform to a degree. It's not software. It's really just more of a community where a knowledge
base. That's the subscription-based
thing,
right? Yeah,
it's a knowledge-based, subscription-based business model. $25 a month, you can come in and take all this, you know, really awesome content that'll help you get up and running in digital marketing. And then if you need help, experts are there to answer your questions. But what's really cool about that is I've been so focused on these events that community has just sort of puttered along. It's done okay, but not great. Well, now we're going to pivot with that, and we're going to change that up a little bit.
Okay.
We're going to move to a new platform soon. We're going to be a little bit more organized and linear with the lessons and guide people through a path of learning as opposed to saying—
So there's a real curriculum in place.
Exactly, curriculum. And so we're going to instead of saying, hey, here's all this content— search for what you're looking for go nuts.
Right.
We're going to say, no. If you're a business owner, you know, tell us where you are on a scale of aptitude.
Okay.
And we're going to plug you into linear lessons that take you through things to get you smart. Right.
Great.
So that's a new pivot coming up with that particular product. And then the other information product, which we launched in May, is a market research report where I basically sit down and analyze online conversations about what consumers are saying about a particular industry or business. We did banking and bank products in May. We're coming out with fast casual and casual dining is coming up here in September. And so that's a new product, which is another opportunity for me to iterate and pivot and change and tweak and see how that's going
to
go.
Well, you seem to get new ideas all the time.
Yeah. So. And right now, you know, it's kind of funny. The ideas have been there for a while. When Aaron Marshall came on board with me at Social Media Explorer for a year, he helped me see those ideas into fruition. He helped me launch them.
Okay.
And so the event
and then
series
he bailed
launched.
On you.
Yeah, then he
big
bailed
dummy.
On. Well, then he you know launched his own idea that didn't have anything to do with me, and it took off. So I mean, Aaron's really good at
good
you know,
on him. Yeah,
he's a good product developer, product manager, and so good for him. But yeah, the event series launched, the learning community launched, and then the market research thing launched. And right now, if I have a new idea, I write it down and I put it in a drawer because I'm real busy making sure the original ideas work.
Right.
And so I want to prove those and make sure that they are generating the kind of revenue they need to generate first.
You're an interesting case because, like me, you're an old media guy.
Yeah.
You're a writer.
Yep.
You worked in radio for a while.
Yep.
Sports information.
Sports information. I was a PR guy in college athletics for a while.
And then at some point, some light bulb went on in your head that said, you know, things are different.
Yeah.
Man, things are changing. What was that instance?
You know, I think there were probably a couple of instances that strung together made that all kind of happen. It wasn't just one aha moment. I got into social media, as it were, writing a newspaper column for the Appalachian News Express in Pikeville, Kentucky. I was working as a producer in New York, and they thought, this is a you know hometown kid gone big. You know, he's working in the Big Apple now, so let's get him to write a column. And so I wrote that column for about 9 months, maybe a year, and then they thought my sense of humor was rather offensive, so they fired me. But I wanted other people to still read my stuff. And so I figured out how to self-publish.
Okay.
And then I would invite people to ask questions and comment and whatnot and send it to me via email, and I would republish that the next week.
Gotcha.
And so I was blogging. You know, 1997, 1998, I was blogging. And because I was trying to nurture this online community for my writing, which had nothing to do with social media. I didn't even know what social media was back
exactly.
then. Nobody did,
yeah.
right? This was, you know, humor columns. I was trying to be the next.
You invented social media.
I did. Maybe I did.
Man, that's great.
I should claim that. That would be cool. but I was trying to, you know, be the next Hunter S. Thompson or P.G. O'Rourke or something like that. I was trying to be funny. And I was trying to build an audience for my writing. And so I was constantly experimenting with social networks, like the early ones like Classmates.com and,
right.
and Friendster and whatnot, and trying to figure out, well,
Classmates.com still is hanging around.
No, how do I get my writing in front of more people? And so I would plug into these networks and find people who were interested in the same things I was and say, hey, I've got this thing over here that you might like. And so the I want to self-publish was the first light bulb that went off. The
okay.
second one was when I found MySpace. That was the explosion for me. It was like, oh my God, there is a huge community of people here,
yeah.
and they love to write blogs, and they love to read others' blogs, and they love to share content and vote for it and all that kind of stuff. And I plugged into MySpace and had, you know, several thousand connections within a year, probably.
Oh wow!
And I had a MySpace blog that was pretty well trafficked.
I wrote a blog on there too at one point. It's long since gone. But.
Well, and if you remember, if you were in MySpace and spent much time bouncing around the blog categories and whatnot, a lot of the MySpace blogs back then, and this is like 2004, 2005, were kind of like mine. You know, they were sort of not safe for work. They were a little adult or humor oriented. Some of them were just flat gross.
Covered in sparkle fairies.
Absolutely. I mean,
Those are the best ones.
I mean, Tucker Max, I hope they serve beer in hell, that book. He got his start as a MySpace blogger.
I did not know. My brother loves that guy.
Yeah, and he's a hell of a writer. I don't necessarily like all of his stories, but he's a hell of a writer. But anyway, so, MySpace was sort of where a lot of really interesting voices sort of found their audience, and I was one of them.
Right.
And then...
Well, it didn't have to run through the filter of an editor
or
some publishing house who was... They were playing by these old rules of what was good and what was bad and what was appropriate, because people didn't know what it is that they liked until they saw it.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, that guy thinks like me. He talks like me. He writes like me.
And what was cool then, too, is I actually found, because I moved about the same time, this was 2005, 2006, I moved back to Louisville, got out of college athletics, and started working at Doe Anderson. And because of the MySpace blog community, I found three other writers who were writing the same sort of general genre that I was writing on MySpace who lived here.
Hmm.
And Bill and Dan Browning and Paula Berba. And I found them, and we sort of started what we called the Sunday Night Supper Club. And on Sunday nights, we would all meet for dinner somewhere and share notes, edit each other's stuff, brainstorm about, storylines and ideas for our writing and whatnot. And we just, kind of had a lot of fun feeding off of each other.
Huh.
And so I was, again, still trying to nurture this audience along for my, sick, demented, twisted humor writing. And then realized one day at work, I looked around and was like, wait a minute, why aren't we talking to our clients about social media and blogging and social networking? And nobody at Doe really had a grip on it either.
Yeah.
They were like,
hey, Jason, we're busy designing this magazine ad.
Exactly. and there's nothing wrong with the magazine ads, but they weren't thinking about digital and social. And then, so I fortunately, Todd Spencer, who's still the CEO there, and Dave Wilkins, who was the CEO at the time, and Dan Burgess, who's the senior VP for PR at Doe Anderson and was my direct supervisor, my boss, they all kind of said, hey, man, if you can sell it, you can do it. Figure it out. Offer some ideas up to the clients, and if they like it, we'll run with it.
Okay.
So they sort of gave me license to take these crazy ideas about the internet to clients, and I did. And Maker's Mark and a couple of them bought a bunch of ideas from me. And
cool.
And so we...
It was very risky on their part, too. I mean, if you can sell it, you can do it. But at least it was... they were looking ahead a little.
They weren't afraid to put this guy that they didn't really understand what he was talking about, but they knew that this movement, this new social digital world was changing.
Mm-hmm.
The world was evolving. They said, hey, we've got somebody in-house that seems to know what he's doing there. Let's let's put him out front and see what happens.
Okay.
And so it was a little bit of a risk, and I certainly, you know, hat tip to those guys for giving me the confidence and the freedom and the backing to do that. One of the first ideas that I took, you know, to a client, you know, was a six-figure idea. And, you know, we put together...
How did you put a price on it?
I have no idea.
I think 102, put some zeros after
well,
that.
What's really funny about in the marketing world, more often than not, all you really have to sell is your time.
Right.
And
yeah,
so, you know,
yeah.
You look at, okay, what's it going to take to build this from a development standpoint?
And social media is free.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
And so we threw this idea at the client, and the client was like, you know what? That's kind of what we're looking for. I really like that idea. And so now all of a sudden it's like, okay, Jason, you're no longer a PR guy.
Do you work for
the
Bourbon?
Director of social media.
Yes, I do.
I wish
Mr. Samuels.
I wish I could have been paid in bourbon back then, although, you know, I probably got paid okay. But
yeah, well.
I went through my fair share of bourbon.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
You work with startups frequently?
Yeah, I do. We work with a lot of technology companies, partly because we have our finger on the pulse of the technology space.
Okay.
And we've worked with a few before. I mean, I've worked, you know, when Rob May started back Upify, I did some early on marketing consulting for him.
What was it? Livestream Backup.
Livestream
the original
Backup,
name.
The original name, yeah. And yeah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. I'll never forget one of the big days early on in that company. I think Rob would probably circle this as one of the big days. Rob and I both at the same time were doing consulting work for Humana, and we were sitting next to each other. We had cubicles in the innovation center at Humana right next to each other, and Flickr went down, and all of a sudden the internet, you know, Twitter and whatnot was exploding with, oh my God, I can't get to my Flickr pictures. And you know, Backupify or Livestream Backup at the time or whatever, backed up Flickr pictures. And so
it was already, this was not the seed of the idea.
This wasn't the seed.
It was already up.
Yeah, it was already up. And so basically, Rob turned to me and said, hey, Falls, Flickr's down. This is an opportunity. And I'm like, yeah, let's throw up a blog post about why you should back up your Flickr, you know, account or whatever. And he said, you know what I think I'm going to do? I think I'm going to offer, like, you know, 50% off or free accounts to everybody for the next 48 hours or whatnot just to drive users. And I'm like, okay, go for it. And so I helped him sort of put together, I think he wrote the blog post, but I threw out some ideas.
And Humana paid you to do all this work. You did it on Humana's time,
well,
right?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far. Especially since I might, you know, we might want to work with Humana in the future.
No, I'm just kidding.
But anyway, so no, we... so he throws up a blog post, and the next day he did a little experiment, came in and Googled Flickr outage or some other keyword scenario like that. And the backup of our blog post was the number one.
Great.
Because, you know, we all posted it, you know, all the social media roddy sort of gathered around and said, hey, this system will back up your stuff, man. You've got to have an account here, right? And so it had all these inbound links within a short amount of time, and it was the number one ranking. And I think that was one of the big days that helped get Backupify sort of off the ground, which was cool.
Well, my question is something like, I mean, you know Rob very well and other people that you've worked with. Is there a common trait among all of these guys you can point to that sort of speaks of success? Like what do all these guys have in common, the guys that are doing it well?
Yeah, I think there's probably several different things. I don't know that there's one trait that's in common of among all the CEOs and startup entrepreneurs that I've met that are successful. But there's a couple that emerge that are pretty common threads among most of them. I think almost all of the successful startup CEOs I've worked with are very focused. They have a very clear vision of what they have, what they want to build, and where they're going. But at the same time, they are open and flexible enough to see, you know, like Rob at some point said, we've got to change the name of the company, Livestream Backup. You know, people think we're an environmental group, right? And so he saw that. He got consumer feedback. He was listening to his customers and the public.
Good.
And he made some changes. And then obviously as his company grew, he realized, okay, we've got to be able to monetize this better than individual accounts. We've got to come up with some, you know, SaaS solutions that are enterprise focused. And so Backupify grew up, you know, from a, hey, let's back up your Flickr pictures and your tweets to, hey, big
they
company,
still do that?
Let's,
did they leave all that behind?
No, it's all there.
Because I think I have an account.
Yeah.
They saved my bacon at least once.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I still have my Backupify account and have had to, on one occasion, go in and pull down a WordPress backup of not Social Media Explorer, but another blog that I help manage. And so, yeah, it stuff works. The focus and the determination and the vision, I think, is a trait that's there. But there's also that flexibility of sort of reading and reacting to the marketplace and knowing that the idea that you originally have, although you've got, you're determined and you're focused, it may not be the right idea. It might be close, but it may not be the right idea.
Willingness to listen and adapt.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so I think that's one trait. And I think another trait that I would say is almost, it's almost the same answer, but on the opposite end of the spectrum, they don't try to do too much. You know, that focus keeps them, you know, dialed in on the problem they're trying to solve right now.
Okay.
Because it's real easy, especially, you know, for people like me that are sort of in that marketing, you know, writing, creative mindset from time to time, I can shoot off 20 ideas a day. And if I didn't know any better and if I wasn't determined and focused in my business.
Chase a different one every day.
I'd be like, a cat chasing flies, man. I'd be all over the place.
Sometimes the cat catches the fly.
Sometimes. So you can get lucky if you're scatterbrained like that. But man, that focus is something I think that I see in a lot of startup folks. And then the other thing that really comes into question and is a consistent trait among successful technology startup CEOs is you've got to know how to raise money.
Hmm.
You know. You just got, I mean, unless you have money or have enough of an entry level business model in your product that you can, you know, like for instance, Aaron Marshall, his, you know, app Over.
Sure.
When it launched.
Coming soon to Windows Phone.
Yeah, absolutely. When it launched, it was $2, right?
So sure.
He had a revenue stream from day one, mm-hmm. right? There are a lot of people out there who are building really cool stuff who have no money. And so they have to turn around and find investors who will say, okay, we're going to bank on the fact that you can build a business
mm-hmm.
without actual evidence that you can drive an ounce of revenue. We're going to risk some money and leverage, you know, help you leverage that money to get new developers, whatever. If you don't have that initial influx of revenue from the time you launch, you've got to know how to raise money because you're not going to be able to build a successful company in the long run without something. Without some sort of money to, you know, hire a developer, hire a marketing team, right. Hire a PR team, whatever.
It's a hobby if you don't have
absolutely.
Money.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I look at a lot of really interesting ideas, really interesting companies out there, and I say, well, how are you going to make money? What's your business model? And they're, well, we're going to build users right now, and we'll figure that out later. And I'm like, well, good luck.
Hmm.
Because if they say, we're going to build users right now and figure that out later, and they don't immediately say, but I'm already talking to this VC
right.
and this angel investor and this person. Then
or
I
this
know,
sponsor or yeah, advertiser or
exactly.
whatever. Who's, you know,
at that moment, if they don't follow that up with, but here's who I'm talking to raise money,
right.
I can reasonably predict they're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not thinking about both sides of the aisle. Yes, you have to have eyeballs and users and traffic, but you also have to have money to be able to build a structure, a framework of a company.
That was the first habit of a highly successful person.
Yeah.
It's begin with the end in mind.
Absolutely.
You know, they began, they had an idea.
Yeah.
But the end has to be money.
Yeah.
I mean, we are Americans after all.
And it translates, too, to my business because when I left O. Anderson, I didn't have an end in mind. I was like, I just want to write, you know, do really cool strategies and develop really cool ideas for clients. That's what I want to do. I didn't have I want to drive X amount of revenue. I want to, you know, build information.
Do you have all
products.
That now?
I
mean,
I have all that, absolutely.
Did somebody have to discipline you to do that? Or did you just one night over a glass of bourbon go, oh my gosh, I need a business plan?
Well, like, what happened was it was when that one client stopped paying their bills and I realized,
okay.
Oh crap, I may not be able to pay my mortgage this month.
Right.
I mean, I was probably, this was 9-10 months into my business. I was probably about 45 days from going bankrupt.
Wow.
It was hard.
That's scary.
I was scared. And what I did, and I'm just infinitely blessed to have been in the position I was in at the time, because what I did when I realized, oh crap, they didn't make their payment this week. I didn't get a check from this particular client. Now what am I going to do? I called probably five or six conferences that were coming up in the next you know, 60 days, 45 days, whatever, and said, I want to come speak and I need you to pay me. And they were like, you'll come speak at our conference? How much do you want? You
know? Wow.
And so I was just in a very fortunate position to run out and generate revenue immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so the speaking gigs, the paid speaking gigs, that became my short-term fallback, but also became, okay, I've got to be able to nurture that along.
Did you ever have the intention of doing that?
Well, yeah, I was getting paid to speak at the time.
Oh, you were? Okay.
I was getting paid to speak, but I never had realized that I can push a button and make that work.
Okay.
It was just I would get the opportunities would sort of trickle in and come along, and I had a couple of people who were doing events that I could depend on for two or three speaking gigs a year.
Okay.
And it was always icing on the cake. It was never my primary revenue source. But that's the day I realized, okay, I can push some buttons and make money. And so let's figure that button out, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Let's not make that icing on the cake. Let's make that predictable.
Okay.
And then as I started to think about how am I going to diversify my revenue streams in order to not have to depend on four or five clients and hope that they don't, you know, fire me or whatever, that's when I started to really think like a business person. And make a plan and have goals and expectations.
Well, it kind of leading into the next thing I had written down here was, you know, I'm a big fan of Crush It.
Mm-hmm.
The Vaynerchuk book really said something to me.
Yeah.
And you seem to be fitting that. That's not a mold, but you know, you're following that path of building brand equity in yourself, which you just said it paid off because you could pick up the phone. I need to speak. And you need to pay me X? And they're like, yes, that's great. But that could not have been an easy thing to do.
No.
To work into that. People, of course, if you haven't read Crush It, this is for the listeners. Gary Vaynerchuk advises you to figure out what your passion is and then make that your career.
Yeah.
And just do what you love. How difficult was that for you and what sort of mentality did it have to take? In order for you to say, okay, I'm going to make myself the business here.
Well, I think for me, it wasn't all that hard. And I'm sure the folks at Doe Anderson would agree that I have a fairly sizable ego. and I try to keep it in check. I mean, I'm not a narcissist, but I...
You know your stuff.
Confident in what I know and what I can do, right? And so when I was, you know, sort of drowning in the... additional work of new business and running the interactive department at Doe, but wanted to be doing more of this social media strategy stuff, and knowing that writing and coming up with cool ideas for clients was what I was really passionate about at the time and could be passionate about for a long time, it was a pretty easy decision.
What if the Pittsburgh Pirates gave you a phone call and said, we want you to be our guy. Shutter your business and come work for us. You got to move to Pittsburgh. That might be the deal killer right there.
It might be.
Is that, I mean, one of the things that I admire about you the most is your devotion to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Because that ain't easy, man.
Yeah.
I'm a Reds fan and they've sucked for a long time and this looks like it might be our year.
Yeah.
So, which is great, but I mean, is Pirates baseball something that maybe you're more?
You know, Pirates baseball is definitely something that it's at the top of my passion list. But you got to remember, I worked in sports for 15 years, and I know how to work in a sports environment, and I know it's very different from being a fan and being passionate about it.
Gotcha.
And so I probably would say no unless they said, you know, you name your price, we'll pay you whatever you want. And
okay.
I could make it financially equivalent to what I'm doing now or what I want to do in the next 5-10 years.
Okay.
I might say yes. But you're right, the deal killer would be that if they wanted me to move to Pittsburgh, which
that's
obviously
tough.
I would
that's
have
tough.
To do that. That would be tough for me because my wife has told me, I moved her to Birmingham, Alabama for 5 years once upon a time. She's born and raised in Louisville. And when we got back, she and her mother sort of collaboratively told me that if I wanted to move to Boston or Austin or San Francisco as part of this, you know, great new career I'm building for myself now, that's fine. But I would either have to commute or get a divorce.
How about that?
And so,
a woman of principle.
I moved her away for 5 years, and that was enough. And she will not move away again. So, that would probably be a deal killer.
I married a Kentucky girl. I'm kind of stuck here too.
There you go.
But I know I just grew up across the river. That's no big deal.
Yeah, it's not bad. So, well, I mean, I grew up in Pikeville, so it's all good for me too.
What last question? This can be real quick. And what's your take on the Louisville startup scene? I mean, you're working in and around it.
Yep.
How are we doing?
I think that the Louisville startup scene is, there's a lot of potential here. There's a lot of, I think, untapped potential here. And you've seen a lot of people and a lot of different organizations trying to bring disparate groups to the table together. You know, you've got Forge, you've got, you know, we tried to do it with Social Media Club for a while, and then that became Louisville Digital Association, and LDA is still trying to do it. You've got, you know, lots of other
startup drinks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Louisville Geek Dinner, so on and so forth. There's been lots of people that have tried to sort of organically push everybody into the same room so that something magical can happen. But I think the big problem that Louisville has, and I wrote an opinion piece about this once upon a time, and then Todd Earwood talked me out of posting it. I think the big problem that the Louisville startup scene has is that everybody's in it for themselves. Nobody is willing to step back and say, we just need to do this and see what happens. We need to have this big, a community where everybody can sort of trust one another and everybody can feed off of one another. And we need to put some money and some energy behind a, you know, big co-working collaborative space for developers and programmers and engineers and whatnot, just to see what happens. Not because I'm going to make money off the rent, not because I'm going to get a piece of all the companies that come out of it. We don't need an incubator. We don't need, an organized profit center thing that's going to happen. We need people to bow up and say, if we're going to do this, it's going to be because we want to do this for Louisville, not for ourselves. And I think there's an element of every player at the table wants their piece of the pie on the back end to be explicit up front, and it frustrates people when they're trying to collaborate and do things for reasons that might be a little bit more true.
Like the mayor's office would be the best candidate to pull something like that off if we had the money to do it.
That's true. That's true. I mean, to be honest with you,
I don't raise my taxes.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I have said this before, and I still have some plans to try to do this at some point. As Social Media Explorer becomes more successful, I would like to have a space, and I'm willing to, you know, when I can financially do it. I can't do it right now, but when I can financially do it, I'm willing to plop down the rent on a big facility and open it up and say, okay,
plenty of real estate around. I mean, seriously,
everybody come work. Come work at Social Media Explorer. Let's just put the right people in the room together and see what happens. And I'm not going to be in it for a piece of the pie of everybody that comes in the room. I'm going to be in it to just be around smart people.
Right.
And I think,
because who knows what's going to come out of that environment.
And I think if more than one or two people had that attitude and we kind of got together and made something like that happen, I think magic would happen here. I think it would be a hell of a lot more vibrant startup scene.
Mm-hmm.
But to date, I think everybody just wants their little piece of the pie. And that's not necessarily bad. It's just that if we're going to jump that hump of hemorrhaging talent, and I think in the last year or so, we've hemorrhaged a lot of talent in Louisville. Mm. A lot of people have left. If we're going to jump over that hump and not hemorrhage talent and actually keep companies here and nurture them and grow them, we've got to get together collaboratively as a community and have some angel investors at the table, some, you know, educators at the table, some marketing PR people at the table, some business development folks at the table. Maybe the GLI gets involved. Maybe the mayor's office gets involved. But typically, no offense to those folks, but when they get involved, crap just sits there.
Bureaucracy.
It doesn't get done.
Sure.
So, I mean, if I could wave my magic wand, and if any funders are out there listening to this and you want to talk to me about this.
Oh, they're listening.
Yeah. So if you guys want to talk to me about this, I would like to rent a big freaking space, open it up, and just have everybody come hang out and work and collaborate, and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And I'm not in it.
That's kind of exciting. Like, I'm sitting here right now. It's quarter till three on a Friday afternoon. I'm like, God, that sounds great. Yeah. Let's start now.
Let's do that now. Right, exactly. And Jason Falls will not be in it to have a percentage of everything that goes out the door. Jason Falls will be in it to just see what Louisville can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not leaving. I'm going to be here for the rest
of my
life.
Yeah, we've already established that.
And so I just want to see, you know, a more vibrant community, some more companies take root here and grow up here. I don't want the next Backupify to move to Boston.
Yeah.
I don't want a guy like David Yeiser, who is an awesome user experience designer, to leave and go to San Francisco.
Right.
I don't want Aaron Marshall to take over to the Bay Area or wherever he's going to end up leaving because he can't find the support he needs here. Mm. I don't want that to happen. Social Media Explorer is never going to leave, so maybe we're going to be one of those companies that takes hold and grows here.
I've had the two guys from Impulsity on.
Yeah.
And they're I think this may have been in the unaired podcast we did with them. I recorded it, and we never put it on because it became outdated by the time their turn was up. But we got to consider – we want to think about where we want to move.
Yeah.
And I was like, why would you move?
Startup entrepreneurs in Louisville, it's a really bad sign when they start with that thought.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. First of all, we need to decide which actual startup community we're going to target as where we want to live next.
Yeah.
You know, we want to go to Boston, or we want to go to Austin, or we want to go to the Bay Area.
I think there's a lot going on here. And I don't know if I had hit on it, accidentally fell into it just by, you know, having these little talks.
Yeah.
But there's more going on here than I knew about.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not the right guy. I don't have my finger on the pulse of the startup community here. You certainly have yours on it more than I do.
Oh.
But I see almost on a daily basis, I will run into people at coffee shops or at meetings or whatnot, and someone will point to another person in the room and say, "Hey, that guy's building a mobile app that does this, 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 and this." And I'm like, "Get out of town, really?
Yeah.
That guy here in Louisville? That's cool."
Yeah.
But there doesn't seem to be a melting pot where all of those folks, those ideas can kind of come together and feed off of one another. And I'd love to build that.
So. Well, we'll get started on Tuesday because this is a long weekend. Sound good?
I need somebody to help me front some rent and somebody who's not going to, you know, want to stick their talons in the business end of it in order to be able to pull it off. So call me if you're interested.